Bob, you just made us cry. Thanks a lot.
Oh, Chuck Mangione.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's sad, huh?
I had been through a Chuck Mangione listening, deep dive, where there was that, Luigi Mangione, the accused killer of that health insurance executive. And so I started listening more to Chuck Mangione. Turns out they're not related, but it just kind of got me in that direction.
No, but that's the first thing I thought of when I thought Mangione.
I think a lot of people thought that, but...
Well, at least it reminded me that how much I loved that album.
That album was beautiful. He played so beautifully, and he really hadn't been seen much. He was on King of the Hill, you might remember. He was a recurring character on King of the Hill, and I think he had anger management issues, but something about playing the trumpet made him not want to beat people up or something.
Are you a fan?
Oh, yeah. French horn, right?
Flugelhorn.
Flugelhorn, yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Which is kind of a fatter trumpet.
Give it all you got. Maui
yeah,
Wowie.
That was a good one.
Feels so good. It's a great album, and it's, is anybody doing that kind of music right now, in
no.
the popular culture?
Chris Botti.
Oh, yeah.
Would probably be, he's a jazz trumpeter, and Chris is a really fantastic musician, and I would say they kind of occupy similar spaces. Yeah.
Chuck Mangione has passed away at the age of 84, died in his sleep Tuesday in his home in Rochester. Hall of Fame, 2012. Okay, Bob. Thanks for that news. Kelly Leonard's in our studio today, the Vice President of Creative Strategy, Innovation, and Business Development at Second City, the Second City. He's the host of Getting to Yes and the podcast. And since Second City is where we think Stephen Colbert cut his teeth,
yep.
Did he cut his teeth there?
He was in my very first cast when I became producer of Second City in 1992.
Did you maintain a friendship with him?
Oh, yeah. Well, my wife was his roommate at Northwestern, so they're old best friends.
So you've stayed in touch?
Yeah.
When did you talk to him last?
This last weekend.
What did he say?
I don't know that he wants me talking on the radio about our conversation. I will say this. About a month ago, he and Ann were talking.
That's your wife.
That's my wife, Ann, who also works at Second City. And he was talking about maybe he should consider producing a documentary about late night television because, he's looking at the landscape, and he was sort of thinking maybe he's going to be one of the last ones. I can tell you he did not at that time know that he would, be going off the air this soon. I'm not worried about him in terms of finding his place.
Why do you say that?
He's so talented. So we mentioned this when I walked in the studio. I spoke at the Aspen Institute this weekend. They did this climate conference, and I was interviewing my friend Ali Barthwell, who's a writer for John Oliver, about how you can use comedy to talk about things like climate change, difficult subjects. And the Colbert thing came up. And the silver lining I found in this is that he has such power that they're looking to silence him. And we should celebrate the fact that we have these comedians, these gifted comedians, who are so powerful that people in government and business people are scared of them, that they want to try to eliminate their voices, but you can't eliminate voices in the world we live in today.
I think the first reaction to it was they did it because of his criticism of the president.
Yeah.
The second wave of information was no, the show was losing $40 million a year. He makes 20, it employs 200 people, it wasn't profitable.
Well, that's a lie. This is a for-profit, John Williams, this is a for-profit company, would they let a show on there that's losing that amount of money? The answer is no.
I don't know the answer to that question. I know you know a lot more about this than I do, but I do understand the idea of a loss leader or a brand ambassador.
And sure.
Colbert was a cool show. But I understand, again, just some of the stuff that came out, that late night advertising and late night ratings were down.
Oh, totally. There's no question they make less money. There's no question that, ratings are down for late night. And there's no question that that is an art form that will probably not exist anymore because we don't all watch things at the same time, and that's where you'd get the news of the day. And by the time you get to that hour now, we've all consumed the news of the day. So totally understand that part of it. But the screen that somehow is losing $40 million is nuts. And who's providing that information? Yeah, the company that let him go. They're not opening up their books to show you that that's the case. They're saying a thing and people are believing it, and I don't think they should.
So what do you think happened?
I think there's political pressure. I don't know how direct it is. I know they're trying to sell the company. And, you know, they probably thought, hey, it's going to go away anyway, so let's do it now. And, you know, I mean, look, I'm biased. He's my friend. And I love the art form. So it's complicated. I get that.
Where do you think it resurfaces? Or he does?
It could be a podcast. It could be a streamer.
Could he be a Netflix?
It could be Netflix.
But he wouldn't be every night then, probably on Netflix. Netflix isn't really doing that.
Yeah, the John Mulaney show, they're doing a talk show that's live.
Yeah, but the John Mulaney show was completely live.
Yeah, completely.
Was experimental, and I don't think it was that good.
Yeah.
You want to fight me on that?
I don't want to fight you on that. I also don't want to beat up on someone who I really admire.
Amen to all of that. God bless him for trying.
Yeah.
But you just saw, if John Mulaney can't make a spontaneous, unedited live show work every night, then you know how hard it is to do.
Absolutely. I mean, but there's so many other forms. I mean, YouTube. Do you know how many people are on YouTube?
I know that YouTube is now the number one host for video podcasts. That's no surprise. But yeah. The number YouTube says is 1 billion downloads. Now I don't remember what the is. A year, a day, a week, a minute. It must be 1 billion different downloads of podcasts on YouTube now.
My son had sent me a clip because there was a guy named Dr. Mike, who I didn't know. And he's a physician and apparently has a huge audience. And this YouTube clip, he talked about how every doctor should take improv classes. So my son saw me, sent me the clip, and I went and looked at Dr. Mike's page, and he has 15 million subscribers who are watching his videos every week. And I'm like, that is such a huge audience.
About that, you know about podcasting because you're a great podcaster, yeah. But obviously you are a visual guy. What do you think about the fact that what is essentially spoken word is now getting this new audience as a visual product? It's just people sitting around talking.
It is. I prefer just I don't watch my podcasts on video.
A lot of people that watch them, in fact, just listen to them,
I think,
but
so
keep
too.
Going.
Because for me, the intimacy of the voice is kind of what I'm getting to. I pay attention more. I think it's just another place to put that content. And because so many people are on YouTube, especially younger people, we just started a YouTube page for the Getting to YesAnd podcast 3 months ago. You know, and you know, it's not like huge audience. It's not as many as we get on Spotify and our other, you know, channels. But, you know, we'll rack up a couple hundred views. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if that's 200 people who wouldn't have heard it otherwise.
Understood. What podcast do you listen to?
I listen to history podcasts. The rest is history. There's a World War II podcast that is called We Have Ways of Making You Talk.
You're not that old to be into World War II. That's your dad's generation, not you.
I'm afraid it's my generation. My son makes fun of me all the time because he says, at least your midlife crisis is listening to World War II podcasts.
Do you have a book at home about submarines then, too, Boomer?
I don't have that.
Well, then your inventory is incomplete.
I'm Gen X. Yeah.
Let's talk about what you came in to talk about today. Unless there's something else you want to say about Colbert and what happened.
No. Let's talk about this.
You said before we came on the air that this podcast and this book that you just finished changed your life or something like that, which is the definition of hyperbole, but go ahead.
No, it did. It's so far it's changed my life, and I keep recommending it to people. Caroline Fleck is a psychologist and adjunct professor at Stanford, and she's written this book called Validation: How the Skill Set That Revolutionized Psychology Will Transform Your Relationships, Increase Your Influence, and Change Your Life.
Say the title again.
It's called Validation: How the Skill Set That Revolutionized Psychology Will Transform Your Relationships, Increase Your Influence, and Change Your Life.
Keep going.
So let's start with the story that opens the book. It's an aha moment. So Caroline is a 27-year-old doctoral student in clinical psychology, sitting across from a 22-year-old man in a real session, but it's being filmed live to a room down the hall, to a classroom, of 10 other trainees and her clinical instructor. Caroline has a monitor behind her client where her instructor can type messages to her. It's like practice, right? The patient knows this. But it's the last 5 minutes of the session, and the man across from her tells her, very matter-of-factly, that he was thinking about killing himself that evening. So she freaks out, kind of doesn't know what to do, and her instructor types a message. What she's remembering is you're supposed to assess like suicide at the start. She's flailing. The instructor types the words validation, all in caps. And Caroline instantly sort of understands the direction. And she just says to him, her patient, she goes, "This sucks. This has got to really suck for you." And instead of trying to convince him that he shouldn't commit suicide, she just tries to see him and understand him and make sure he understands that she sees him and understands him. And then she says, "Let's turn off the camera and go for a walk." And they just talked. And it worked. It was okay. He came back. And the central idea of this book is that across successful psychological practices, and this also works in hostage negotiation training, which we've talked about before and we can talk about more, that the thing to do is simply validate the other person's feelings. Their feelings are not wrong. You can disagree with the thing they're going to do. You can disagree with all sorts, but their feelings are their feelings, and people just want to know that you understand and you see them. And guess what? When you do that, that opens the door to everything good. Hmm.
I wonder how many men got that message as the business end of an argument they were having with their wives.
I have to tell you, I have a great marriage. Like, Ann and I are, you know, we're blessed. But, you know, marriages aren't easy. And we were going to a wedding. And she had to go to this wedding with me. I had to go. And she kind of had to go too. And there were going to be people there that she didn't like, that people maybe who weren't good to her at a certain point. We go to the wedding and we're leaving. And I think about this validation thing. And I just said to her, "I'm really grateful that you went with me because I didn't want to go alone. And I also know that was really hard for you. And I just want you to know I know that. And I'm sorry." It changed the tenor of the rest of our day. In what was sure to be gripes or, you know, arguments or whatever, all it took was me acknowledging a thing that was true. It wasn't that it was untrue. It was the truth. I was just saying the truth to her. But she felt seen.
Yeah. You know, my reflection on that was more the exact opposite.
Yeah. Tell me.
Well, I was always, for too much of my life, I have been trying to solve the problem.
Oh,
and so where my wife or my kid or somebody would have a thing, and then I would either try and not mansplain it, but put it in perspective or offer the other side, because if we can see that, that'll be constructive and helpful or whatever. And, you know, at one point, Brenda just said, "All I want is some validation." And I thought, wow, am I way too old to just see that now?
Right.
I mean, it seems to be the easiest path too, doesn't it?
This is why this is life-changing. It is simple. It requires no heavy lifting whatsoever. I've talked before about my friend Allison Wood Brooks with you, who wrote the book Talk, and she has a whole chapter about just apologize.
Kelly Leonard is here, Vice President of Creative Strategy, Innovation, and Business Development at The Second City. He's the host of the Getting to Yes And podcast. Every time Kelly joins us, he talks like this. They're always incredible life-saving or altering, benefiting stories. And he's now talking about a book, Validation, how the skill set that revolutionized psychology will transform your relationships, increase your influence, and change your life. And Kelly, before the break, you were making the point that there's no heavy lifting. If you hear, see, feel somebody, if you validate where they are in a moment, then that does a lot to what? Finish that sentence. To what?
That opens the door to actual dialogue. That opens the door to a relationship rooted in trust, listening, sharing.
I wonder, though, if maybe because it seems relatively easy, if it's maybe less authentic that way, too. I mean, I think those of us who used to try and solve the problem for people were at least working it. This is like, oh, I hear you. Oh, that sucks. Oh, yeah. Well, anybody can do that.
Well, okay. Caroline said validation does not work if you're faking it. So, and this is look, in improvisation, we've talked about this before. In improv, the first thing you need to learn is to not be in judgment of self or judgment of others. You have to get out of your fear and shame brain. You have to recognize that your job is to save the person across from you and their job is to save you. And once you have that, you can make something out of nothing. The phrase we have is you need to play the scene you're in, not the scene you want to be in, right? So this is we know this. You can't be successful improvising if you are doing things like faking it. So if you drop it, like just drop all of that and understand that everyone's feelings are valid. You can't tell me that's not, like, their feelings are their feelings. You can't change them necessarily. So just validate them. Just start there and then see what happens. Mm-hmm. It's just like what we teach the improv students, right? Don't judge, offer something up. The other person's going to offer it back and let it go.
I read an interview with Ken Burns the other day, and he said that if you want to persuade the other side, facts are blanks. Those are not bullets. Facts don't change people's minds, at least not about politics and at least not right now. He said stories do. He would say that, but he said, I don't know if that was his idea of the Trojan horse, you know, put all the facts or the arguments in the story and then roll it in, but the story is the bridge.
Absolutely. So can I make a little announcement here?
Mm.
So we're working with a group called the Argosy Foundation, and they agreed to fund a limited series podcast that I'm executive producing. So it's going to come out in the fall, and it's called This Might Get Awkward. And it's hosted by the social scientist Scott Barry Kaufman, frequent guest on Getting to Yes and also the Second City comedian Allison Reese. And the idea is we're going to bring people on. Caroline actually was one of our guests because we wanted her to talk to us about how we talk to people we might disagree with. How do we stay in these conversations? So we're going to bring on people with controversial thoughts and ideas, and we're going to talk to them. We booked Andrew Yang, who ran for president, as we know. Not someone I necessarily agree with his politics. We're going to have Norman Finkelstein, who is a Jew who is not happy with Israel and the situation in Gaza and is angering a lot of different people. So we have the guy who primaried Matt Gaetz, who's a Republican, Aaron Dimmock. He's going to be on the podcast. But one of the things that we're starting every episode with is we're having them share their favorite comedy bit, no matter what it is, and we're going to talk about that. And the idea is we're getting us all in a state of play. We're going to talk about the thing that unites us, which is this thing that we all find funny. And so far, everything everyone shared is hilarious. And so that's a kind of storytelling, right? That we're sharing. And then we ask the question, how would you solve the cultural political divide? And we're getting into really, really interesting conversations. And it is all storytelling.
Do you worry that platforming some of these people is elevating them when, in fact, they are toxic?
I don't think the people we're talking to are toxic.
Would you put Stephen Miller on? Would you put Matt Gaetz on?
No, I wouldn't. We talked about that. There are, you know, we have to align. I don't take those people seriously. I don't think those are serious people in my mind. Those are people who are using outrage and clickbait for attention and money. The people that we're talking about simply have a strong point of view, and they believe in it, and we might think differently.
This might get awkward.
It might get awkward, and every episode has gotten awkward.
Is it persuasive isn't the right word, but is the end game to nudge them over to a certain side?
That's not what we're looking for. We're going in and trying to find out, you know, what do you believe, and you know, what are your ideas? What are your solutions for helping people? Loretta Ross was one of our guests, and she wrote a book called Calling In, as opposed to Calling Out. And she's a 70-something-year-old black feminist activist. Oh, she's so funny. And the thing that she said that was just floored all of us is she goes, people just need to respect each other's suffering. If we do that, I think we can mend this thing.
Talk about validation. Validation, how the skill set that revolutionized psychology will transform your relationships, increase your influence, and change your life. Kelly Leonard said it's a changer. Although you strike me as a person who already had that skill set, but if it helped you even more so, imagine what it'll do for people like me. That's Kelly Leonard, and he's also the host of our Getting to Yes And podcast. Nice to see you.
Great to see you.